its future is uncertain. The lands that host wild caribou herds in northwest Alaska, where Seth Kantner grew up, appear at first glance to be a harsh and indifferent landscape. But it can nurture and sustain you, as it has done for the wildlife of the region for millennia, if we don't get in the way. Seth was raised in a homemade sod hut and learned to live off the land by being observant and resourceful, just like the ancestors of his indigenous Inupiat neighbors have done for centuries. Seth explores the natural and human history of life on the tundra in his latest book called A Thousand Trails Home, Living with Caribou. It includes a bounty of beautiful photographs he's taken of his Arctic surroundings. Seth joins us now from his home studio in Kotzebue, Alaska. Welcome.
Oh, you're welcome, Rick. Thanks for inviting me.
So I'm fascinated by this idea that living on the tundra in the Arctic seems harsh, but can nurture and sustain you. What is a perception that we might get wrong about the harshness of the tundra, the frozen tundra?
Pretty much everything, I guess. I remember as a kid, people had this idea of snow igloos and eating raw fish, I guess, was kind of summed it all up, and or spit freezing before it hit the ground. And it was kind of a strange dichotomy because I was born in what we call a sod igloo, you know, built in the ground and in a tunnel and old style life. And we slept on caribou skins, and the place was small and low to keep the heat around you, and dark, and mice on the floor, et cetera. But outside was the land and kind of every day, the season and weather, and each day decided sort of what my family did as far as gathering wood or setting nets under the ice, or mostly those early years gathering caribou meat, caribou skins, caribou sinew for thread, and on, a lot to do with caribou.
So, yeah, because, you know, judging from the cover of your book, A Thousand Trails Home, Living with Caribou, it looks like the world is, it's the world of the caribou. I mean, it looks like a big community square, and they're all just hanging out there gossiping. But you shared that terrain with them, and you learned to find sustenance in the Arctic environment. And also, there's a pretty strong heritage from indigenous people on how to be one with the environment. What kind of lessons can you learn from the indigenous people in this land?
Historically, there was, you know, vast amounts of knowledge about every plant and every lake and slough and otter and loon and all that. A lot of that is gone with, you know, more and more technology every day coming north. I think there's still quite a lot to learn from, for me anyway, being out with nature itself. The harshness and the, I kind of hesitate to say it, but the uncaringness of nature, and at the same time, the providence. It's certainly exciting in the fall when it's a good cranberry season, or it's exciting when the tundra's been empty of animals and suddenly thousands of caribou are coming towards you. It's those are big feelings of not just connection, but plain old food and provisions to survive.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that, because I feel like, you know, everything is kind of hunkered down when the world is white and covered with snow. But then the day does come when the flowers come out, and the insects and the bees and the birds and the greenery and all of a sudden it's like you almost feel like there should be an orchestra, you know, singing some festive anthem as life comes back in the spring.
There totally is an orchestra of the migratory birds. You know, in winter we forget there's such things as insects and most birds and flowers, and even the idea of water being wet is not there. You know, everything's frozen. And so spring is this birthing of a new season, but you're basically sitting in one spot and you're along the river or along the coast. And then along comes a different landscape that's so different. I equate it like winters like Antarctica and summers like Africa with the billions of mosquitoes and all the birds that show up and the greenery, and then back to that idea of water being wet again.
Yeah, I would think that insects are kind of a welcome thing when spring hits and you feel
you would think wrong.
That's a romantic approach. Okay. So, but the birds come back. Let's say that's a nice thing.
Oh, it's a huge thing. Yeah. The air is full of, and I always refer to the birds just jokingly as tourists, because in winter, there's ravens and chickadees and gray jays and a few other, you know, snowy owls. And then they're all putting in their time. And then suddenly here come all these tourists, the geese and ducks and sparrows.
Is it a short season? When does the spring actually come?
With climate change, we're still holding on to spring as pretty accurate. May, mid-May, and the ice down here on the coast goes out in June.
Okay, so we say April showers bring May flowers. You would say May showers bring June flowers.
Yep, pretty much, yep.
There you go. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Seth Kantner, and he's written a book called A Thousand Trails Home, Living with Caribou, sharing his experience living in a quite a remote location on the far, northwest coast of Alaska. Seth, can you explain to us about your hometown, Kotzebue?
It's not my hometown. I grew up about 150 river miles east of here. Then the closest village was the Inupiaq village of Ambler, a couple hundred people, about 25 miles from the sod igloo where I was born and raised. Now I'm on the coast maybe half the year, commercial fishing, and that's out of Kotzebue, which is low wind-blown country, kind of north of that.
On the coast.
On the coast, north of that piece of Alaska that almost touches Siberia. So we're kind of north of the Seward Peninsula. I guess you could say it's a harsh country, but real rich with seals and salmon and caribou and musk oxen. And nowadays, moose have moved north. And I think there's been times in the past when disparagingly people talked about Kotzebue being the armpit of Alaska, but I'm noticing that more and more people are realizing it's a pretty nice town with really great country around to spend time in.
My sense would be it would be a town that has a little more commercial heft than its population might merit because it serves a vast area as a place to come and get your provisions and your tools and so on.
Yeah, Amazon.com has changed some of the way provisioning works in Alaska, for sure. But yeah, this is referred to as a hub town with 10 villages, far-flung villages served by Kotzebue. And a certain amount of that service now has to do with like social and health. And now there's park service and fish and wildlife and fish and game. And so Kotzebue is a hub town for those agencies.
Seth, you know, this whole idea of A Thousand Trails Home, Living with Caribou, give us a sense of the majesty of the vast herd and what it's like to be living with it.
The herd comes and goes with the seasons, which the migration in the fall is used to be September and October and then trailing off in November. And it's like an arrival of a new nation flowing around your doorstep. And in this
case, it's a mobile nation. It's a nation that migrates.
I grew up where if we saw humans, people, it was rare and we were pretty excited and ran and told my parents. And, you know, if we saw a grizzly bear, we would maybe not bother running and telling my parents. So the caribou were companions and still are for me. And then if you spend enough time out with them, you see all sorts of things. You see them running away from fake news, and you see them blocked by open water, and you see them struggling to get out of after falling through the ice, and you're kind of seeing yourself.
What a concept, running away from fake news. So there's some rustle in the herd, and it's like a false alarm?
Yeah, it's just constant, really. Caribou can arrive at a river and there's indecision, there's waiting for a leader. Usually the herd is led by females. And then somebody starts crossing the ice and then there's a batch of fake news. Either a clump of ice falls or a eagle flies over and everybody flees back through this terrifying thin ice and then they start again. And if you spend your days observing that, which I do doing photography and or hunting too, you get to sympathize with this incredibly tough life these animals endure every day.
Our guest on Travel with Rick Steves is Alaska writer Seth Kantner. In 2004, Seth's debut novel, Ordinary Wolves, won a number of awards, and he was named one of the nation's top emerging writers. His 2015 title, Swallowed by the Great Land, explored the duality that comes with growing up in the Arctic. His latest title is called A Thousand Trails Home, Living with Caribou. It profiles the sweeping changes impacting the lives of the Inupiat people of Northwest Alaska and the Western Arctic caribou herd. His website is sethkantner.com. Now, for a white Alaskan to be living off the grid, surrounded by indigenous culture, you must pick up a respect for the caribou from your indigenous neighbors and also skills about how you can live off the caribou. Traditionally, and even for you, how does the caribou contribute to survival?
That's changed a lot. If you go back 100 or more years, the skin of the caribou is, they have hollow hair, very warm, but prone to wearing out quickly. So it was incredibly important for survival to have those furs to wear when you were out hunting other caribou or wolves or bears or whatever. And then, of course, the fat, everything to do with survival, you know, 100 years ago had to do with the fat for dog teams and for people for surviving the cold. So caribou were incredibly important.
Yeah, now it'd be a lot easier because you can just order your food, I suppose. Uber Eats delivering. But you wrote in your article, fat meat made us feel safer.
Yeah, there's no exaggeration there. And that's still part of the culture. There's a lot that's faded and disappeared as modernity has flooded north and made everything so easy in many ways, maybe not psychologically. And so caribou now, I would say that psychologically, caribou have taken on a larger importance. And then as far as just sheer survival, that has dropped away.
Yeah, well, the caribou are struggling to survive. And I would imagine the indigenous peoples are also struggling to survive, at least with their traditional ways, against climate change and development. What is the story for the, can I say Eskimo, or what is the proper term?
Well, Inupiat is the group that nowadays there's this drift towards Eskimo being a maybe bad word, but the people I grew up with, and they still call themselves Eskimos and prefer that.
If they call themselves Eskimos and if they prefer that, then it would be okay for people beyond that community to call them Eskimos too, I suppose.
Yeah, you could run into problems in the larger metropolitan areas like Seattle or Anchorage with somebody upset with that term. But if you went to a village, you probably would never have that issue.
It's nice people are coming to their rescue who don't understand them very well.
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion now with that. And then, you know, loss of culture. And then you talked about development. That's a huge concern for not just the culture here, but also the land and animals. And then, of course, connection between the culture and the animals. If you have development, you're kind of destroying those connections and destroying the food source and the land.
Yeah. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Seth Kantner, who's joining us from Kotzebue in Alaska right now. And he documents the traditional way of life in the Arctic in his books and articles that he's written and in his stunning photographs of the region. Seth's debut novel, Ordinary Wolves, explored the world of a white man raised in the Arctic who feels out of place in both the white and indigenous cultures. Seth's autobiography is called Shopping for Porcupine. His latest title further explores the beauty and the tensions of life in the Northwest Alaskan Arctic. It's called A Thousand Trails Home, Living with Caribou. We have links to his work at ricksteves.com/radio. If I could just read something that you wrote, I mean, you've really tuned into this. I guess there's a range that is threatened, and you wrote this for the National Parks Conservation Association a few years ago. The Brooks Range is too special, too valuable, too important for this greedy travesty. This is a large-scale, intact ecosystem in a world of shattered ones. This is home to the last great herds of caribou, to countless clear watersheds stretching on and on to millions of acres of habitat for trillions of living things. Wow. So development, and this is in this particular case, it's a copper mining industry, right?
Yeah, looming today over us is this proposed Ambler Road or Ambler Industrial Corridor that would come off of the Alaska Pipeline Road as a 200-mile industrial corridor straight into the Brooks Range and basically to my home here and bring 1,000 trucks a week or something along that corridor and giant open pit copper mines to the headwaters of these giant clear rivers like the Kobuk and the upper tributaries to the Kobuk. And all that would, like I said earlier, affect the people and the connections to the land, but also just directly affect the Western Arctic caribou herd, which until recently was nearly 500,000 animals roaming this country, which is, you know, on par with the Serengeti and the last great herds on Earth.
To have that threatened, if you live there and if you've grown up with it and if you appreciate the heritage and the connection of nature with humankind, it would be so important for people to go up there and take a hike with you and get a sense of this. Also, the threat of climate change. Talk about how climate change has, what are the tangible impacts of climate change today that you see from your sod hut there in the tundra?
Well, Rick, the simplest thing to say is that what we talked about, the seasons coming and going. And so summer, we can't travel very far on the tundra because it's swampy and wet. But then traditionally come September or October, all that country would freeze. And then we could walk and run our dog teams further and further, and snow would come and we would travel mostly on ice. And with climate change, the falls are a month later or more that we are sort of pinned down by slush and rain and ice starting to form and then remelting. And it would be like if you got used to roads in the world and traveled on roads, but they disappeared in the summer and you didn't know if they were going to come back. That's what climate change has done for travel. The vegetation is on steroids. You know, we've got blueberry bushes that are towering now and so-called dwarf birch that are 8 feet tall and spruce trees growing on the tundra, and things are sloughing and melting as the permafrost is destroyed and methane's bubbling up in the lakes. It's kind of a giant mess.
Well, Seth Kantner, you have a very important connection with nature, living where and how you do. I understand you're a guide when people come to visit Kotzebue. Let's say I'm going to come and visit your town. Take me out to see the caribou. And just let's close this discussion with what you would like me to experience and be impacted by when it comes to the caribou as such an integral part of the whole natural ecosystem.
That's a tough one. Northern Alaska is so huge, and climate change is making the migrations very unpredictable. So yes, I think I'll take your number down and call you when the caribou are flooding around both sides of Kotzebue. And if you come up at a random time, it's really hard to predict in what 200,000 square miles the caribou are going to be in. And then
so things are unpredictable.
That's an unpredictable animal with a lot of changes taking place now. But yeah, you would fly north to Kotzebue and then probably charter a Cessna and fly further north and look for the animals. It's huge country and a really amazing landscape, but comes with its own extra large challenges.
Well, Seth Kantner, thanks for writing your book, 1,000 Trails Home, Living with Caribou, and also illustrating with such beautiful photographs. Best wishes in your work. And again, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Rick. I really appreciate it.
Whispers of the North, soon I will go forth to that wild and barren land where nature takes its course.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton, Casimir Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Our website is managed by Andrew Wakeling. Our theme music was written and performed by Jerry Frank. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.